welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, March 18th, 2013, and this is episode 42, the ultimate answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything, just in case you had forgotten that. My name is Rob. Jason's here. What's going on?
Not much. Brought my towel, just in case.
Good for you. You should never go home, never leave home without it.
Yeah, it was just recently Douglas Adams would have been his 61st birthday.
Was it 64? For 61st. Okay,
yeah.
All right, yep. Yeah. Yeah, I'd heard that it was a birthday, yeah. So, yeah. Oh, Mr. Adams.
I'd say happy birthday, but he's not with us, so, yeah.
Happy birthday in memoriam.
Have you read all those books?
Of course.
I think I've read, like, most of them. There's one, I don't remember which one it is, but it's farther in the series.
Okay.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't get through this book.
Which one?
Might be Mostly Harmless, but okay. I could be wrong.
It's very different from the first four. That's the fifth one. It's very different, but it's still good.
Is that the one where Zaphod ends up on the weird planet? He's like climbing up the big satellite dish or something? That's the one that might be So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. I don't know.
I don't remember that.
Anyways.
Is that when he's living inside a piece of fairy cake? Or he's existing inside a piece, or the universe is condensed. I don't remember. Something to do with the universe and all that is reality being within a piece of fairy cake. And doesn't that blow your mind? And Zaphod's like, nope. And eats the fairy cake.
Nice.
Yeah, Zaphod's awesome. Man, yeah. I'm so hip, I can't see past my pelvis. It's one of my favorite lines. Man, I'm so cool, you can keep a side of beef in me for a month.
One of my favorite things about the whole series, and it's just a little detail, but it's the thing that Douglas Adams was so good about,
yeah.
Was the, I think they were called the SCP glasses, someone else's problem.
And no, it's an SCP field.
SCP field.
Somebody else's problem field.
They would just turn dark.
Well, those were the peril sensitive sunglasses.
That's what they were. Yeah. The peril sensitive sunglasses. There's like this huge action sequence where Marvin and Zaphod are under attack.
Uh-huh.
And Zaphod's like, it's like the second it happens, like, of course, Zaphod couldn't see any of this because right. his glasses went totally dark.
Right.
And he's like stumbling around and it ends up saving his life.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Marvin talks to the robot until it explodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was in Mostly Harmless because that was, they were in the big Hitchhiker's Guide corporate offices and they were in the cross piece of the H. And there was some other big robot that was attacking them trying to blow them up.
Yep.
Yeah, that's familiar now. It's ringing bells. Yeah, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish was the fourth one, and that was the one with Agrajag. I loved Agrajag. Yeah, you probably don't remember
Agrajag. Was that the one who hated Arthur?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because Arthur kept killing him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because oddly, all the Bull of Petunias thought was not again.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
See, don't you want to read them again now?
I kind of do now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
They're great.
I've read the first one like four times now, mm-hmm. I think.
I own four different copies of the first one.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of dumb, but I do.
It is kind of dumb.
Yeah. I have two copies in paperback. I have a hardback version, which is the More Than Complete Hitchhiker's Guide, which is actually a really old edition because it was printed before Mostly Harmless came out. So when you buy the More Than Complete Hitchhiker's Guide right now, it has all five books. But this is the More Than Complete Hitchhiker's Guide that's incomplete because it doesn't have the fifth book in it. And I have the illustrated... I have an illustrated version of the first book with a bunch of photography that, you know, like collage stuff. It's pretty funny.
Wow.
And I'm sorry. I also have the Hitchhiker's Radio Scripts, which is, I think, the first three books from the original radio play.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the things I appreciated, too, was every time he did a new format, he would change the story a little bit.
Yeah, I was totally okay with that.
People were really cheesed off about the movie.
Yeah.
But
it's like,
he had his hand in that. Like,
yeah,
he
before
wanted
he died,
there
yeah.
to be things changed
right.
because
it was standard.
That's how he did it.
Right. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I think the radio script's actually a little bit funnier than the books, to be honest with you.
Really?
I do.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing really to me that will ever be funnier than Alan Rickman as,
as Marvin. Yeah. Yeah. I hadn't seen that movie in a long time either.
They had a lot of good casting of that.
They did. Sure.
Sam Rockwell, his Zaphod was good. And, mm-hmm. Martin Freeman, obviously,
well, of course.
Is friggin' right. hilarious.
Yeah.
Hey, what you been playing?
Oh, well, I've been doing a lot of playtesting lately, but the one game that I've played lately that was not one of mine or one of yours was a game called Marauders.
Marauders.
I don't think you and I have actually talked about this.
No, I don't think so.
No, recently went over to a friend's house for a game night, and we went there to do, number one, to do a playtest of Frankenstein's Legacy for me.
Yeah.
We finished that a little early, and we had time to play this other game they had called Marauders. And it was a Kickstarter game that they had gotten from a campaign there. And I don't remember all the details of what it was, but for some reason it was like $5 on Kickstarter, and you got this full board game.
Nice. Sounds like somebody missed a zero when they were putting in on the price.
but it was something about how these guys were doing this Kickstarter campaign to raise money, and they were selling these, selling only a limited number of copies of the game, and they were selling them just at cost, whatever it was going to cost to produce them. And they were trying to sell them super cheap and a very limited number, just to say that we will send this to you if you promise to play it a certain number of times and send us feedback. Some kind of a weird thing. Right. Yeah, I didn't quite understand what the goal of that was, but I guess maybe to help them build some, get a wider audience to do some playtesting for them. No cost to them, you know, no extra cost to the people. The people actually get the game. So anyway, it's a pirate game, and it's about pirates exploring an island and trying to dig up treasure. I mean,
that's what pirates do.
Basic stuff there. And the board is made with tiles, chipboard tiles. So modular board kind of idea here. What was it? There were 16 tiles. So you make a 4x4 square for the island. And each tile has like a lake on it and some rivers on it. And it's got a grid, you know, it's got a place where you're supposed to put down a tile for a buried treasure. So basically everybody has two pawns that they're moving around the board. Okay. And you're moving your pawns to different places, and you're opening up treasure chests to try and get the treasure inside. And you can then spend those treasures as you get them, as you can make jewels and whatever. You can spend those as you get them then to get a peek at the hidden treasure. Cause there's six, maybe there were eight cards laid. I think it was eight cards that were laid out face down, next to the board. And those together, there were two blanks and then six that actually had information on them. And if you can look at those six clues and then get your piece to the specific spot on the board where the final treasure is buried, if you can get there and be the first one to dig up treasure, then you win the game. So you're digging up treasures all along the way, but the main goal is not to get the money from those treasures, but to spend that money to reveal the clues, but only to yourself.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Kind of a neat idea. At any time, you can also agree. You can make a deal with another player to try and, you know, trade clues or trade information or trade treasures. And they handle that with kind of a neat rock, paper, scissors idea, where you have two cards. You have like a skull and crossbones card, and you have a handshake card. And you say, let's say you and I are going to make a deal. I'm going to trade you one clue for another clue. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm going to trade you. I have clue A, you have clue B. We want to trade those. And so we make that deal, and then we secretly take either the skull and crossbones or the handshake card, and we put those down face down, and then we flip them over. Okay. If we both reveal the handshake card, then we trade that information. If we both reveal the skull and crossbones, then neither of us gets the information. If I reveal a handshake and you reveal a skull and crossbones, and you double-crossed me, and so I have to give you the information, but you don't have to give me the information.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So it's kind of
how did that mechanic work out?
Well, we were so focused on moving our guys around the board that we didn't even remember to do it.
Okay.
I think we did it once through the whole game. So if we had been more engaged with that, I think it would have been pretty cutthroat and pretty fun, honestly. But as it went, the rest of the game is kind of pedestrian. You know, you just kind of move your piece around. You can move a certain number of squares. You turn the thing over, and either you can put a guy there to guard it so nobody else can get that treasure or get that clue, you know, or you move on to the next one and so on and so forth. But that kind of cutthroat, make a deal, I double-crossed you kind of idea is kind of what made it stand out a little bit, which was neat.
Cool.
Yeah. So Marauders. It was not bad.
Marauders.
I don't want to. The production, the components were not really high quality, and the artwork was not really high quality. But I think that can be chalked up to the fact that they talked about it as a kind of a pre-release copy for feedback. So I would not hold that against the game at all.
Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting prototype.
Yeah.
Idea.
Yeah, no, yeah. And interesting for that aspect, too, to say that that's a different way to get your product out there to get some feedback on. To right. try and, in the end, make a final thing. I don't know that I would do it that way, but...
You know, I know other people that have done that, but they do it through GameCrafter.
Oh, yeah, like, right.
So they just set it up and say, hey, you can buy this at cost from GameCrafter.
Right, right.
Just give me some feedback.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. But anyway, it's cool.
Cool. I, like you, have been playing a ton of prototypes of our own. We've had another big testing night recently where we have forthcoming recordings from that over the next month or so.
Yeah, lots of recordings.
Yeah, I think we recorded 3 more playtests.
Yep.
So all of different stuff that we hadn't recorded before, I think.
Well, let's see. We did Frankenstein's Legacy. We did Snowball Fight. And we did Freaky Deakies. Yeah. So, and we haven't recorded any of those before.
So those will be coming up as we pitch those games. We'll try and throw those up with the week that we pitch the game if we can.
For sure.
We like to try and make that match like that. So I've been playing a lot of those. You know, one game that I've been playing a lot of again recently, I don't know what happened. I just was like, maybe there was an update or something, but it was on my iPhone. Plants vs. Zombies. Have you seen the game before?
I know what it's about.
I mean, it's a strategy game, right?
Yeah. Where strategy tower defense, right?
Yeah. But it's different than most tower defense games in that, you know, there's not a path. They're just walking at the thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you got to build plants to kill zombies, which is ridiculous.
What a weird idea.
It is.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been playing around with it just because I used to have like pretty strict strategy that I followed. Like, that's how you win. But then I kind of got bored with that, so then I would try and, okay, I'm going to get rid of all the zombies this time without building a single tower, like only building defensive things that also do damage. And that's kind of fun. So I've been playing that in my spare time, which I haven't had a lot of because, like we've said, we've been working so much on prototypes.
Yeah, a lot.
A ton on prototypes. Yes. So that's pretty much all I've got going on with that.
I'm not sure how much to say about the playtesting of my stuff recently here. The last pitch that I did was Frankenstein's Legacy. I repitched Frankenstein's Legacy.
Right.
And I've had a lot of really good progress on that. I'll just let the listeners listen to that recording, and maybe I can come back to my thoughts on it next week. I think it'll probably be a better way to go. Let them have a chance to hear our experience with it, and then I can talk about where I've been since then, the recording.
And then I'll talk too about my feelings about us playing it a little bit more. So sounds good.
Look forward to that next week, gang. More talk about Frankenstein's Legacy. I'll just say right here, I'm feeling pretty good about it. I feel like I've reached a milestone with it. So
it's like a real game.
Yeah, it might. I actually finished a game once. Moving on then, huh?
Yeah, moving on.
Okay, how about a mechanic? And since this is the one mechanic we will be talking about this week, I would call it the mechanic of this time in which we are.
Yes, I like that. Let's go with that.
What you got?
All right, so I was thinking, this is actually a mechanic I thought of a long, long time ago that I wanted to talk about.
All right.
But I never really had a name for it.
Yeah.
It's specific to one game. I'm going to call it like an upkeep mechanic.
Upkeep.
Yeah, like you have to pay an upkeep every turn for something. Lots of different games have this, all sorts of different games. Specifically, though, what I'm thinking of is the game Stone Age.
Yeah.
And there's a food mechanic in this game. And for the people who haven't played Stone Age, first of all, go play Stone Age. Stop, pause the show, go play Stone Age, come back if you've never played it. All right, good.
Well, you could listen to the show in your car on your way to your local game store to go pick up a copy, because I'm sure they have it in stock.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's also good. If you have an iPhone, you could also download it to your iPhone or iPad.
It's better on their table, though.
Yeah, it's way better on your table. I would play it that way first.
Yeah.
Also, I think it'd be confusing to just try and play the app first.
I would think so.
So, there's this food mechanic, and what it says is every turn, for every villager you have, or every tribe person, you have to give them one food. And if you can't... then what happens is you lose points. And the whole purpose of the game is to gain points.
Yeah.
And you lose like 10 points, I think, for each person you can't feed.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's pretty extreme.
It's extreme.
Yeah.
Like that, it's a lot of points. So you don't want to not be able to feed people. That's the big thing.
Right.
And I was thinking about that. Like, that really limits your growth in the game. Mm-hmm. You really have to manage that, which is why when I play, my strategy is almost always get the grain boost that gives me extra food every single turn. That way, eventually... my people just pay for themselves, because you can actually net it out to where you have 10 of those and 10 people, And every turn, your mm-hmm. people are just fed.
Yeah.
But thinking about that, that kind of limiting upkeep factor that forces you to manage your growth.
Mm-hmm. So it's you're gathering this resource, but you're required to spend this resource. You don't get to choose how this resource is spent.
Right.
You have a preset obligation. And based on your actions elsewhere in the game, that obligation will increase.
Right. And there's okay. that's the cool thing about that.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. You can't do anything else with the food in the game. It mm-hmm. is worth nothing.
Yeah.
Except for to feed your people.
Right.
Whereas everything else in the game, you can use for multiple different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all dual purpose. Even, you know, the tools you get, you can use those to get more food. But the food feeds the people, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like sometimes it almost feels like a wasted resource, right? Because you're not really doing much with it other than keeping your people alive.
Yeah.
And it's kind of annoying sometimes to have to focus on that, mm-hmm. to have to say, wait, I need to get ore because I'm trying to buy that thing. My people are going to starve.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it throttles you in the game, you know?
Yeah, that is a really good,
yeah.
good way to say it, that mm-hmm. it kind of throttles you and, mm-hmm. holds you back
to force you to devote some of your, otherwise useful guys to do something that you don't really want them to have to do, but it's necessary.
Right, and food is the easiest thing to get. Mm-hmm. You can't block sure. someone from getting food.
Right.
In Stone Age, there's different... When you roll dice to get stuff, and there's different dividing factors you have to divide by, and mm-hmm. that determines how much you get, and that has the best one.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you're using your resources to keep your resources.
Yeah.
So it's got nothing to do with growing.
If I was going to put this idea into Frankenstein's Legacy, for example, let's say I was going to do it as a salary for the assistants that I'm hiring.
Okay, yeah.
Because the listeners might remember that I've talked about one of the features of the game is that you have to hire assistants, and you're going to send your assistants out to go get body parts, and you need body parts to build your monster. Okay. So if I was going to put that into Frankenstein's Legacy, let's say that I have to pay a salary to my assistants, and for every assistant in my deck... Every time I shuffle my deck and get back to the end of my deck, for every one assistant I have in my deck, I have to pay X dollars in order to keep them. Otherwise, every dollar I fall short of that, I have to trash one of those assistant cards.
I could see that.
Okay.
So, well, first of all, my thought with Frankenstein's Legacy is that would make the game a lot harder.
A lot harder, yeah.
A lot harder. Right.
What are the positives and negatives of that? Okay, so negative, it makes it a lot harder. It makes the game take a lot longer. It would make me...
Which is already the game's number one difficulty.
Right, it's too long. Yeah, and I've already figured out a way to cut that down. So
I'm excited.
I'll talk about that next week.
I'm excited.
It also means that I have to make it easier for people to get money in the game. It's already pretty easy to get money in the game. But then the next question is, well, how do I keep track of that? I would need to be able to keep track of that money separate from the normal deck of cards, because as it is, that money only comes up when you draw the card.
Right. You'd have to be able to, like, pay it into a fund or something.
Or something, yeah. Or track money as tokens somewhere else.
Right.
You know, okay.
So I guess in that case, a negative is it adds a lot more...
Complexity
to the game.
Yeah, more components.
Just crap to the game that you have to try and track. And
right, right. But positives... it's a way to limit your options or a way to force you to have to manage more information. So it demands more of the player for their strategy.
Well, and another thing, just thinking specifically of that game is, you know, when we played, I won't go into a lot of detail here, but one of the things you had told me ahead of time was people had trouble getting body parts.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm buying assistants. I'm buying lots of assistants.
Yeah.
And I had like 10 assistants in my deck. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was constantly getting body parts.
Mm-hmm.
That would not be a viable strategy.
In that case, no.
You had to pay a bunch of money for that.
You'd want to limit yourself for that. Yeah.
You'd only want to buy the best ones too.
Yeah.
Because you have different levels of assistants. That would be like in Stone Age, if you could get cheap workers... Who were just as good of workers as everyone else, but they ate twice as much food.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want those workers.
It's true.
yeah. even though they were cheaper.
Even though sometimes you might need them.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of another popular game.
That either features that or that where it could be added
I was trying to think, yeah, where we just shove it right in there.
Maybe, what if in Monopoly you had to pay some kind of additional upkeep for your houses and hotels? Because as is right now, you buy it and it's done. What if you had to pay for maintenance or upkeep on those?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would make that game even more difficult than it already is.
Yeah. Would that? Do you think that might be beneficial to the strategy experience?
In a game like that? Gosh, I don't think so. Just because the game is, you know, it is what it is, and having to add that extra layer, I think that would be difficult for it.
Yeah.
It would really, gosh, I don't know. It would really, that would be tough.
Yeah.
You know, and I think of other games, well, see, and what it comes back to is see with the Monopoly, right? And even with Frankincense, I can see the way you're talking about something that's good for other things that you have to use for that too.
Yeah, you're right.
Whereas, you know,
in Stone Age, the food is food and it's not used for anything else.
It would be like saying in Monopoly, you had to take some of your money and buy food with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then use that, you know, spread those tokens out or something.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're right. So you wouldn't want to.
What if you had to buy electricity and then dole out electricity like tokens based on what you had on anything? And you could, you know, if you let the power go out in a neighborhood, then when somebody lands on it, they don't have to pay you.
Mm-hmm.
So you might let the power go out in the slums because they're not worth much. But you're not going to let the power go out on Boardwalk and Park Place because, I mean, we still come back to siphoning your money to do something. But really, Stone Age does do that too because it's siphoning your workers. Your worker placement is being forced to do that. So,
well, but that's an interesting point though, because in Stone Age, it's your workers are doing the work and they're either gathering resources or they're gathering food to feed themselves. So you're not spending resources on food; you're spending workers on your food. So workers are getting food for workers.
Yeah,
that's just it's a 1-2 combo there. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing else involved in that. So it's almost like you'd have to, if you're doing it in Monopoly, your worker is your game piece moving around the board. It would be as if sometimes you had to detour your game piece off the board to go into the center of the board to do something else.
To pay your electric bill.
You know, and maybe it doesn't cost anything, but you have to just go there or you could say maybe your game piece is a worker. You know, he's a worker. He's doing work for you, right? He's running all over town, so he's got to go back to the home base occasionally and punch his clock,
right? Or you could say that sometimes when he passed go, he had to not collect money, right? Because I mean, a Monopoly strategy wise, if you got to go sit off to the side sometimes, that would actually be useful, right? Because late game Monopoly, if you could not have to go around the board.
Yeah.
And just let your opponent go around the board. I mean, late game Monopoly, being in jail is awesome, right?
It can be, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, but in this case, you'd be saying, well, he still has to go around the board. He still has to keep going around the board, but sometimes he just doesn't get that cash for passing go.
That, I think, makes more sense.
Yeah.
Another thing we might be able to shove this into is, like, Settlers of Catan, you know? So you're spending resources to build... to build roads, to build villages, and to build settlements, as they call them, and to build cities. What if you also had to spend resources to see? It kind of has to be worker placement for it to be exact. You know what I mean? For it to be the same type of example,
they have to be. It makes it easier, yeah,
because it just kind of fits right in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I suppose you could have. You know, I referred to it as kind of like an upkeep cost, like throttles your growth. So, I mean, you could have a game where you're building an army, like Risk, for instance.
Yeah.
You can get more people in Risk, right? But as you get more people, what if you have to, you know, you have to feed them. So you have to divert some of your armies to go gather resources to make, you know what
call
I mean?
Pillage the local villages that they've conquered.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you don't if you don't put enough guys into that, then your armies elsewhere are going to be in trouble, and you'll get a penalty to your roll on your next battle.
Exactly. Because, I mean, you know, supply lines were a big deal in the wars.
Sure. Yeah, that's a legit thing to talk about that, yeah.
In fact, I'm confident there's probably some other more complicated...
Yeah, or maybe where you have to maintain your supply lines and things.
Probably has a mechanic like that.
I would think so. Huh. Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. So we'll call it upkeep. Worker upkeep.
Worker upkeep.
Worker maintenance.
Worker maintenance. Could be.
Yeah.
Those could all be possibly valid terms.
Yeah. I like it though.
And listeners, I'm sure you know of other games where there's things such as this. So shout them out.
Tell us.
We'd like to know.
Yeah.
We always appreciate when you tell us about
when we screw something up or miss something important or obvious.
Right. So it's nice when you do that because
keep us in check
because we like to know that we've missed stuff.
And we like to hear about games we don't know about.
That too.
Yes.
Big fans of that.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
We ready to move on?
I think we are.
Okay, what's next?
It's time for you to practice the pitch.
Oh, okay. I have a really dumb pitch tonight. Kind of dumb, silly, crazy, dumb.
Okay.
I'll say dumb one more time.
Dumb?
I already said it one more time.
I thought you would say it again.
Yeah, no, okay. So, this is inspired by a video game, all right? It's not really a video game, and it's inspired by a browser game. You can go to this website and play this game on your browser. Simple as pointing and clicking your mouse. Real easy. It's called Frog Fractions. I don't want to talk about that game in a lot of detail because I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
Okay.
Right? I'm not sure what the URL is. Just go to Google and do a search for Frog Fractions. We'll put it in the show notes. Find it. You start the game. And it presents itself as this little kid's game, and you are a frog. You're a little green frog, and you're on a lily pad, and your lily pad is floating on a pond, and there are flies and mosquitoes and things that are buzzing overhead, and there are fruit. There's fruit hanging from the trees above you, and so as the flies fly overhead, you have to click on them, and your tongue will shoot out and grab the insect and take it back, and you eat it, and then a little fraction or a decimal will appear on the screen where the insect used to be. All right.
Okay.
And then slowly the fruit is ripening on the trees. And if you can catch the fruit, eventually the fruit will ripen and fall. And if you can catch the fruit while it falls, then you eat the fruit and you get a big bonus for that.
Okay.
And it's a pretty simple game. It's pretty simple, straightforward, like little kid's game, like numbers game, except pretty much right away you realize, well, it's not really asking me to do anything with these fractions. So why am I doing this? And then it's giving some really ridiculous fractions that don't really seem to make any sense. And should I be writing these things down? What's going on? And then you get to a point where you finish like stage one and you get to level up and put in an upgrade onto your frog. And it gets really crazy from there.
I'm going to check this out.
I think you'll like it
tonight.
Yeah, you should. You can do the whole thing in probably 15 minutes, maybe 10. Okay, from beginning to end. It's crazy, and it's really a unique experience, unlike any other game I've ever played. Totally free. Okay.
All right.
So that inspired me to come up with a board game that presents itself. It starts out as one thing, and then as you play, becomes something else entirely. Something completely bizarre and different that you might not ever expect. And this game is called Tyrannosaur Attack with an exclamation at the end.
Why would it not have an exclamation?
Because it has to.
Maybe even two or three.
I think just one. We'll talk about that if I take it a prototype. Okay. So the idea here is this starts out as a simple roll and move game. Okay. The players are paleontologists who have found a time machine. And they have traveled back into time, into the Triassic period, whatever it is, Cretaceous period, I don't know, wherever tyrannosaurs were. They travel back in time to dinosaurs. And they arrive at the end of this long, narrow, twisting canyon. So the game board is actually this canyon with a single track that your pieces move along, twisting around the board, okay?
Okay.
And you are rolling a die and moving your pawn along this track. And if you want to, instead of rolling a die to move your pawn, you can also search the area to pick, and that means you can draw a specimen card.
Okay.
When you draw a specimen card, it might be a bug or a leaf or I don't know, maybe a small lizard, something like that. But they're different specimens that you're collecting while you're exploring this prehistoric world, and each of those is assigned a point value, 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever. Okay. And so as you're going along, you're collecting these things. At the end of the track is the Tyrannosaur nest and the Tyrannosaur eggs. And if you are the first person to get to the Tyrannosaur nest, then you can pick up an egg. All right. And that's just a card. All right. And the Tyrannosaur egg might be worth 10 points or 15 points. I don't know. But as soon as you pick up the Tyrannosaur egg, the Tyrannosaur mom bursts through the trees and roars at you and starts chasing you. So right away, everybody has to turn and run back to the time machine.
Makes sense.
Now, the Tyrannosaur runs a certain number of spaces every turn. Cannot change that. You roll your die to get away from the Tyrannosaur, and whatever number you roll on the D6 is how many spaces you run. But if you want to go faster than that, you can drop a specimen to go that many more spaces. Okay. So if you rolled a 4 and you move your guy 4 spaces and you can see, oh gosh, that Tyrannosaur is going to get me when its turn comes around, you can drop a specimen card. You can throw away a specimen card worth 3, and then you can remove 3 extra spaces.
Okay.
Real simple.
Yeah.
Real simple, uncomplicated. And if you can, whoever can make it back to the time machine at the end is the winner. If more than one person makes it back, whoever has the most points and most specimen cards is the winner.
Okay.
So naturally, the guy who just picked up the egg, he's going to be the farthest along the track, and he's going to need to book it as fast as he can.
But the egg's also worth 10, so if he drops that,
he can move 10 spaces just on that alone. Right. So, but the game would be balanced, so the Tyrannosaur is very likely to eat you. Very likely to eat everybody. Okay. As soon as somebody gets eaten by the Tyrannosaur, they're not eliminated from the game. Because that causes a rift in space and time. And that player then becomes a pan-dimensional time zombie.
Why would they not become a pan-dimensional?
Well, because they just got eaten by this prehistoric beast in the wrong time.
Exactly.
And this is fractured the fabric of space and time.
Okay.
And so now that person, they don't necessarily have a pawn on the board, but now they discard their specimen cards and immediately draw the same number of time cards. And those cards allow them to bend and warp space and time, and they can move other people's pawns around the board or move the Tyrannosaur around the board. Now, the Tyrannosaur is always going to keep on running in one direction. But if you can warp space and move that Tyrannosaur 3 spaces closer to the next guy so that when the Tyrannosaur's turn comes around, he eats him, all the better.
Nice.
Okay? So now you're trying to keep the rest of those guys from surviving.
Okay.
You want them all to get eaten by the Tyrannosaur. Okay. So you say, well, then theoretically nobody could win because everybody could get eaten.
Right.
Yeah. But if everybody gets eaten and nobody escapes, then you flip the board.
Okay.
You flip the board over, and on the other side, you now have to negotiate the crevasses of time.
Nice.
Because negotiating crevasses is fun to say.
It is.
All right. And now you all have your pawns back, and you start in the center of the board, and now you are trying to make it across, I'm not really sure how this player is going to shake out, honestly. But now you have to move through the crevasses of time to repair the fabric of space itself and then escape to the final rift at the edge and to return yourself back to home.
Okay.
And at some point, of course, then the pan-dimensional time zombie Tyrannosaur will also appear and try and eat you again. So that's the basic idea. Just be completely ridiculous. To start off as one thing and then get stupid and crazy halfway through the game and have everything change. Everything from the ground up change.
Well, off the top of my head, one of the things I really like about it is the idea that with player elimination, you just get to then basically try and kill everyone else.
Yes.
Like, you have lost the game.
Yes.
But you're going to try and make everyone else lose so that you can try and win again.
So you have a chance to win again, right?
That's clever. I like that.
Yeah. And it'd be fun to have a zombie T-Rex.
Yes, yeah. Pan-dimensional zombie
T-Rex. Pan-dimensional time zombies
T-Rex. What he sounds like when he runs around.
I don't know.
Add some, like, stereo effects to that or something.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't think it'll be an electronic talking time pan dimensional time zombie T-Rex miniature.
I'm out. I'm not interested in this game at all. No, all right. I was really interested.
And then when I said it doesn't talk, it's all over.
Yeah. No, I think the game could be fun so that you're not 100% sure how the mechanics on the opposite side of the portal
work. I need some help with that, right? Because obviously the first half of that is easy, right? But right. I want to be able to use those same time cards on the next side, on the other side of the board. And I would like to kind of have some of the basic same flow. Roll the die, you move the guy around.
What if you make it the opposite? So now you roll the die to move, mm-hmm. but you're trying again to pick up specimens because you're trying to pick up the things that you've dropped that have helped cause the rift in space-time. So every time you can manage to pick one up as you're running, you get that bonus again.
So you're picking up the specimen cards again.
Right.
Okay.
So, like, but as you're running, so I don't know how you would work that out exactly to get those, like, across the board mm-hmm. where you'd want them.
You would each have to have your own separate discard pile then? Well, you'd have to keep your specimen cards next to you. You wouldn't have a community discard pile for that. So you're trying to pick back up all the pieces that you picked up before?
I think you could have a community discard pile. Yeah. So it's one community discard pile, right?
Okay.
You shuffle that's now the deck. And then you mark on the board different spots where a specimen was dropped as you were running.
Mm.
And when you hit that, you draw the top card. That's your bonus to how much farther you can run.
And then once all the cards are picked up, then the first person to make it to a rift space is the winner.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. Can we get the T-Rex back in there, though?
Yeah, the T-Rex is chasing you. That's why you're running.
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking this is probably a spiral instead of a winding path.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe
you start in the center and the T-Rex is starting at the end and you're running towards each other in a spiral.
That could be.
Hmm.
I was just thinking that, to try and reverse the mechanic from the front where you're dropping to move faster, you're picking up and that's like, that's time is helping you now because mm-hmm. it wants you to fix the rift.
Right. But you still have to avoid the pan-dimensional time zombie T-Rex.
You know, another thought would be that you make the back not be like a maze, but have lots of alleyways and stuff you can take.
Uh-huh.
And the T-Rex starts at one end, right? And on your turn, you run and then you draw one of the discard cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you move the T-Rex that distance.
Oh, the distance on the specimen card.
So then
like
you're
that.
Trying to screw each other.
I like that.
So I'm like, I'm sending it towards you. And you're like, I'm sending it back.
I like that.
So
I like
and
that a lot.
You know that the egg is in there somewhere, which is 10 spaces.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah, I like that. I think
that might be cool.
That's a good way to handle that.
And you just would have to make sure there are lots of intersections to where you could easily.
Lots of twisting stuff, right? Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. I think that's a game right there.
I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
Be fun.
Very lightweight and kind of silly.
Yeah, you know? But there would be some strategy to it.
Yeah, right. And a lot of screw you in there.
Oh, yeah. Lots and lots of take that. Big time.
I like that. I think I might have to make that game.
You should make a prototype. That'd be fun to play. Yeah. I would try that.
And I can just imagine being in a convention, sitting there in like this big playtest hall. You know, with a bunch of guys with their intense strategy board games and all kinds of cubes everywhere. And I sit down and I have a big plastic Tyrannosaur sitting on the table.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that'd be funny. I think that'd be really funny.
I'm into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Now we know what your next prototype should
be. Right. Tyrannosaur Attack.
No, really get on it because I really want to try that.
Yeah. Game, so. Okay. All right.
I'm not even kidding.
See what we can do.
Make that game.
Yeah. Listeners, what do you think? Let us know. Do you think Tyrannosaur Attack is dumb? Like I do? Or do you think it's the right kind of dumb?
I think it's the right kind of dumb.
Okay.
I don't care what the listeners think. Listeners, if you disagree with me, hold your tongue. If you don't, post the comments mm-hmm. or tweet at us. Hey.
Let me know.
Tyrannosaur Attack.
Tyrannosaur Attack.
Hashtag Rob make that game.
I would love to. If I can get some good feedback, I think that would be a blast to try. Okay. I think we're set with that.
Yeah.
Do we have a Twitter question?
We have one Twitter question from Jeff Large, a.k.a. Banuki, on there. Mm-hmm. He wanted to know, and this is, I assume, in jest that he's actually asking this, but we answer anything we get asked.
Sure, we have
for,
to.
For the most
we
part.
We promised.
There are probably some limits that have not been crossed yet, but we'll see those when we get to them.
Yeah.
He wanted to know if we would rather fight 100 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck.
Fight?
Yeah, like you have to fight them. They're attacking you.
It's like, what kind of weapons do I have?
I think none. I think it's bare knuckle, man.
Bare knuckle?
Yeah.
Bare knuckle fight with 100 duck-sized horses?
Yep.
Or one horse-sized duck?
So, you know, horses that are about this big.
Yeah. I would totally go with the duck-sized horses.
Yeah,
easy. Me too. I mean, there's no question.
I mean, just kick through them.
Yeah, right.
It's that big.
Right.
I'm kind of interested in a horse-sized duck, though, because he'd have to weigh like 100 pounds or something. I mean, like, not much at all, right?
Are you kidding? No, he would be like a 400-pound duck.
Well,
horses are big.
Yeah, but ducks are lightweight. Ducks are birds. They're lightweight. They have hollow bones and stuff. And
yeah, but still, that's a big animal.
That's true.
It's a big animal.
With no way, I mean, was he going to hit you with his bill? I mean, I guess he could just sit on
man,
you.
Well, no. I mean, have you ever been bitten by a duck?
No.
Oh, man, it hurts. They got some jaws.
How did you get bit by a duck?
I was in Boy Scouts. You do things, you know? You play with ducks and geese, and, well, you don't really play with them. You chase them, and then they hiss back at you and snap at you, and it hurts.
Geese, man, I would not mess
They're
with
mean.
That.
Yeah. You know what? The other day, I saw a goose fighting a turkey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Where was that at?
That was at work at the stream, the pond outside the back of where I work.
Really?
Yeah, we have wild turkeys and geese back there. And there were two geese fighting two, mainly it was actually two turkeys hissing and snapping and chasing the geese away. But the geese were snapping back.
Yeah.
But I mean, the turkeys won.
Geese can be mean. You know what's super mean though? Swans.
Swans, yes. Yes.
Swans are not nice.
Don't mess with swans. They will wreck you.
They will fly into your face and they will bite you.
Yes.
It's not cool.
Yeah, no. I mean, think a duck the size of a horse, his head would be like 2 feet long, which would mean his bill would be like a foot and a half long of bone, just snapping.
You know, that's true. That's
snapping.
True.
You could take your arm off.
All right. Duck-sized horses. I'm
in. Yeah, duck-sized horses.
Because those
you
can just kick.
Right.
Kick.
Right. Nothing to it. I would feel bad kicking a horse that small because it'd be very cute.
Yeah.
So would a duck. Ducks are cute too.
A duck-sized horse would be kind of cute until it ate your face.
Well, right. Until it ripped your arms and legs off and then swallowed you. Yeah.
Well, so...
I think we nailed that one.
I think we nailed that question. Wow. Best part of the show. Hey, I do have one plug I'd like to throw out there.
Please.
Fifth Street Games right now has a Kickstarter going.
Yes.
For Baldrick's Tomb.
Baldrick's Tomb.
Looks like a fun and interesting game. They always do really quality stuff. So,
yeah, for sure.
I just wanted to throw that out there. Check it out on Kickstarter. Baldrick's Tomb. Uh-huh. Of course, we'll link it in the show notes.
Absolutely.
But I just wanted to check it out. They still should have some time left. They usually do the longer Kickstarters. So,
they do, for sure.
So,
yeah.
Which I appreciate because sometimes I forget to back stuff. And
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for Jungle Ascent from this street. I'm very much looking forward to that game.
I think that's coming soon.
I hope so. I hope so.
Oh, I can't wait to play that. I can't wait. My wife's going to love that game.
Yeah, she will. She will, yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah, cool. And the last thing I think we should probably say is that we are no longer accepting submissions for our game design challenge. We are processing our game titles and mechanics, and next week on next week's show, stay tuned, because we will be drawing out of a hat. Actually, we have two hats to draw from, one for mechanics and one for game titles. And Jason and I will be doing that live on the show, and that will tell us what games we are going to pitch in the future. We're each going to try and do one game, one game title, two mechanics, all from your submissions. So that'll be a fun time.
Yes. I cannot tell you how stoked I am about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be great.
So, all right.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening to the show. We really, really appreciate it. If you want to send us an email, you can send it to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. I am @poorly_designed, and Jason is @JASlingerland. You can like us on Facebook, and you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes, please and thank you. That would be fantastic. And you can stay tuned for more ridiculous game design nonsense coming from us every week. That's it. Good night.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. I like the way that waveform looks.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Kind of looks inappropriate.